WGN. I was going to say around this time, usually it's a half hour later. We get Eric Zorn a half hour earlier today on a Tuesday, and we're thankful for that from the Picayune Sentinel and hosting the Mincing Rascals this week. Hello, Eric. How are you?
I'm good, John. I understand you were not available to host the Mincing Rascals. I'm going to have to fill in for you.
I only have six other radio show shows to host that day, Eric, so I had to knock that one off the list. No, you'll do a great job. I look forward to listening to it with the crew. I do want to just touch on the ShotSpotter thing because it is in the news. It's something that I don't live in one of these neighborhoods, and I'm now not a Chicago taxpayer. I feel very distant from it, even though I know it's an important issue. But I feel like good leaders, Eric, know when to defer to people who maybe know more about things than they do. And that's sort of what I feel like is wrong about the mayor's approach here, in my humble opinion. 14 out of 17 aldermen, as you point out in your Picayune Sentinel today, 14 of the 17 alder people that are covered by ShotSpotter want it. The police superintendent wants it. I don't know, even if you don't personally love it, don't you defer to those people that are actually living in those neighborhoods?
Well, that's my take on it, too. Like you, I don't live in a neighborhood that has ShotSpotter, and I hope that my neighborhood doesn't need it in the future. But when you look at the alders who represent these wards where ShotSpotter is in play, they want it. And Superintendent Snelling wants it, and he's been getting good marks. Some of the previous superintendents have also spoken out in favor of it. Johnson and McCarthy and those guys have said that this is something that they want. And the thing that has changed about this debate, and just to catch people up real quickly, is that Mayor Johnson campaigned on getting rid of this technology. Said it was too expensive. It costs about $10 million a year. He's going to phase it out after the summer is over. So it's going to next Sunday. This coming Sunday is when it begins to phase out. And he says it's $10 million a year. It's not doing anything. Well, the University of Chicago Crime Lab just came out with a study that essentially shows that, yeah, it doesn't really seem to reduce gun violence like people want it to. But what it does is it, because of the technology, it essentially detects gunfire and it's able to hone in on where the gunshots took place. And it allows first responders, ambulances and police officers, to get to scenes much faster. And this saves lives, and the University of Chicago Crime Lab put the ballpark figure at about 85 lives a year are saved by police getting there soon and saving the lives of these people. And
that's huge.
That's a lot of people. And so what I did today is I took a look at what the data shows about what a human life is worth. And I know that sounds like a really crass thing, but the government does this all the time. It says, like, well, if we're going to impose this safety regulation, what's the realistic payoff for this? I mean, we could make everybody walk around in bubble wrap, or we could, all these different things that you could do. But what is the cost benefit analysis? And so they do that, and estimates as to the value of human life really range. But the Department of Health and Human Services put out a study that basically says that it ranges between $6.1 million and $19.9 million per life. Now, that depends on age and all kinds of other stuff, but it's just a ballpark figure that you can imagine, what a life is worth for lawsuits and so on. So when you look at that $10 million investment, it's going to return, somewhere around $518 million to $1.7 billion in this sort of human cost.
Interesting.
Which seems like a good investment to me.
Yeah, and then the people will be alive. I think that's what I'm going with more so. But yeah, if you want to break down the finances for it, that's an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, and again, the people who live in these neighborhoods, for the most part, want this technology there. Now, there's some issues with it. People say that it amps up the police who arrive, that it over-polices black and brown neighborhoods. All these things are factors to consider, and they're things that should be considered politically. But the aldermen, the alders voted back in May, 34, what was the vote?
34-16.
34-16, to remove Mayor Johnson's power to get rid of the ShotSpotter. So there was a supermajority of alders wanted this done. So you've got the city council wants ShotSpotter in place. The alders who represent these neighborhoods really want it in place, and the polls that I've seen, and I don't know how accurate they are, and I don't know who took them for on what behalf, but they show pretty strong support for ShotSpotter, like in the 70s, in these neighborhoods where it exists.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I don't know what the mayor's game in here.
Well,
he made a
campaign promise, and some people don't like to eat their campaign promises. And I think that sometimes the sign of a great leader is someone that said, "Yeah, I ran on this. I've learned something else, and I'm going to listen to the people that brought me here." Eric Zorn, Picayune Sentinel, who covered ShotSpotter and so many other really important newsy things. I'm going to gloss right over right now and go right to the end where you quote tweeted someone from the Washington Post, I believe, who had tweeted out that they had met a couple that didn't sleep on the same side of the bed every night. As in, when they go to bed every night, they don't know who will sleep on which side. It still blows my mind, said this reporter. It blew your mind too, and mine as well, Eric.
It boggles my mind. How could you not have your own side of the bed, especially at home? I mean, at home, I've got my nightstand. It's got my stuff in it. It's got my chargers, and Johanna's got her book and her crossword puzzle stuff and all that. I mean, we've got our sides of the bed. We have had those sides of the bed for nearly 39 years, and I don't know how we chose them, but they're our side of the bed, and whenever we travel, we always sleep in the same orientation. And I took, this blew my mind also. How could you change sides of the bed? It just seems wrong. And I just took a click poll today. I've got 223 votes so far. And I just said, do you have a side of the bed that never, ever changes? So far, it's 88% say, of course, they do have the same side of the bed. That's, but 12% say, not really. And the answer that I've gotten in the comment thread is that people say that when they travel, they their spouse wants to be close to the bathroom, or they want to be closest to the bathroom.
Okay.
So you might be in a hotel room where one side of the bed is closer to the bathroom, so you don't want to have to walk around the bed. That seems pretty okay to me, but on the other hand, I would be so disoriented by sleeping on the other side that I don't think I could handle it.
Right. When I wake up in a hotel room, first of all, I don't know where I am. That's the start of it. At least the side of the bed I am may ground me in some sort of reality. The bathroom thing I'll go with. I can understand that. The idea that you and your spouse don't know on any given night at home is the most insane thing I've ever heard. Like, is it just first one in chooses? Is it a race to the bed to see if there's a preferred side? Is it rock, paper, scissors? Or is it this organic flow from watching TV on the couch, which we also have the same side of the couch every time on each and every couch we sit on? And then all of a sudden, why am I so angry about this? And then you get up.
I know.
It's crazy.
It's infuriating, isn't it?
It is infuriating, yeah. And it shouldn't be, but boy, oh boy, you hit some nerve of mine. And then to amp it up, you added a tweet in the Picayune Sentinel, or is this you, Pete? You, Pete, added this one. He says to this packet here, I just found a married couple that doesn't have assigned cars. Like, they have two cars, but one isn't his and one isn't hers. They just wake up every morning and grab whatever set of keys and go. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life, says the tweet. I'll back that up, Eric Zorn.
Yeah, so I think that's true. We have two cars, but one of them is like a larger SUV. So if one of us has to do some hauling around, but it's always discussed. It's always like, well, the SUV is mine, kind of, and the sedan is Johanna's. So we will usually negotiate. If we're going to take the other car, we negotiate. So I understand that a little bit more. But you know what? Back to the bed thing. When I go to a hotel by myself, if I'm on the road, I still sleep on the same side of the bed, my normal side of the bed.
By yourself.
It's all ingrained in me. Doesn't even matter if no one else is there.
Right. That is an homage to your wonderful wife. The space you're missing is the hole in your heart that you're experiencing sleeping in her without you in the bed. Exactly.
Yes.
It's an homage. Yeah. You might as well put a big pillow. Sometimes I put a pillow on that side to signify that is his space. This is my space. He's not here, but my thoughts are with him at this time. I don't know how to say this.
Absolutely.
The 630 chimes in. When we have switched sides, which, please explain why, 630, maybe a hotel thing. When we have switched sides, I turn over and I fall out of bed. Yeah, there's some muscle memory that goes into this, Eric, that could cause potential injury.
It's totally true. We also have, of course, the same places that we sit around the dining table. It's all this ritual, and it does, I think muscle memory is a really good way of putting it. I don't think about it when we sit down to eat, or when we sit on our couch, sit on the couch together, or even when we go for a walk. I mean, when Johanna and I go for a walk, she's always on my right side. It's just, it doesn't feel right for her to be on the other side, and I'm not sure where that's from. It may come from folk dancing. I'm not exactly sure. But it's the only way that I'm comfortable.
Okay.
And again, it's nothing I ever think about. But
yeah, I've put in the time to put the grooves in the sofa and the bed exactly the way I like it, which mine are much deeper than Enrique's. And that is the point. I just, on a more solemn, sad note, not sad, but a sweet note, the 847 says, I've been a widow for 9 years, and I still sleep on the my side of the bed. I never cross the middle. And now I'm crying. Here I was mad a moment ago. But isn't that sweet?
That's really touching. But I'm guessing that that'll be true in our marriage,
yeah,
too, that when one of us goes, the other one's going to keep his or her side of the bed.
Oh, well, we took that to
that's
a place
really
that was a little sadder.
Really touching.
It is touching. It is sweet. Eric, we got to cut things a little bit shorter today. Picayune Sentinel, is that where people can go? They can email you to get a part of all the action?
Yeah, if they email me, ericzorn @gmail.com, I'm glad to add you. It's got a free issue every week, and there's lots of fun stuff in there, funny stuff, bad stuff, outrageous stuff, all those things. So,
that's great.
Yeah, please.
Eric, good to talk to you, my friend, as always. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks, John. We'll talk to you soon.